over these next few weeks.
Blog Talk Radio.
You could save hundreds on your mortgage payments or pay off your home loan earlier than planned. You could even take cash out of your home to pay off high interest debt, complete home repairs, or bulk up on an emergency fund. When you want to secure a low rate, Rocket can. Call 833-8-ROCKET or visit rocketmortgage.com. Rocket. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender license in all 50 states and MLS ConsumerAccess.org number 3030. And let's go ahead and take a look now to alternative talk weather outlook for Wednesday. Well, we'll see partly sunny skies to start the morning off, becoming more sunny by this afternoon. Yes, those clouds will dissipate. High temperatures around 78, 79 degrees. A little bit of wind out of the west at 5 to 10 miles per hour, just a little bit of edge off the heat. For the day, tonight, increasing clouds. Low temperatures dropping down to about 57. For Thursday, same thing. Partly cloudy skies with a few sun breaks, clearing up by the afternoon. High temperatures a little cooler, around 71, 72. Partly to mostly cloudy skies for Thursday night, lows down to about 56. Friday, clouds with a slight chance of rain showers, only at 20%. High temperatures around 69.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Are you feeling the complexity of life? Do you feel that urge to step into something greater? Tune in to Nailed It Radio. Find your simplicity within your complexity with me, life coach Carrie Nail. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com to discover what it means to use your full power to be the best version of yourself. Imagine stepping into the energy of saying yes to yourself and knowing you nailed it. For more information about me, visit CarrieNail.com.
Imagine starting your week off with a teaching, a clearing, and an activation direct from the God consciousness. If you would like to feel more in charge of your week ahead, then I personally invite you to join me, Tracy L. Clark, for our monthly Soul Sunday non-denominational service at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, online or in person. All donations for this event go to the TLC Initiative Fund to help those in need. Sign up now at TracyLClark.com and let's connect together in the glory round.
Welcome to Soul Activation Podcast, a world-class broadcast of insight and inspiration with the renowned healer and coach, Suzanne Alexandria. In this series, she dives deep into the magical sea of you, to the place in you that's ready to activate. Tune in live every second and fourth Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
We figured by the time we turned 50, we kind of had life figured out, but we were not prepared for the realities of midlife. Tune into And That's When I Realized, the truth and comedy of midlife, with me, Susan Dolce,
and me, Leon Dyer, every second and fourth Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You're not alone in these challenges, and sometimes you just gotta laugh.
Find us at SusanDolce.com and LeonDyer.com.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seat, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. I'm adjusting my mic right there for everybody. Hello, Mr. Benny. How are you, B?
Hi, Yvette. Doing well.
I'm B. Good. Thank you very much for asking yourself.
Good. Yep, Olivia is also at the helm today. I'm really excited. I was reading Allison's book. Allison Carmen joining me here today. A Year Without Men, a 12 point to inspire and empower women. But wait a minute. Let me just talk about this for a minute.
Yeah, because I almost had to jump in there for a minute. I don't know what's going on here. Well, what is this book all about here, Pat? Come on.
Yeah, let me just...
Come on now. You can't deal without me, right? Oh, no. What's going on?
Oh, my God. A Year Without Men. But then here's what I want to say to you about.
Yes, ma'am.
I got to talk with and get to know my relatives, my aunts and my uncles. But my aunts, who went through like World War II. Do you remember that one?
Me personally, okay. No, but I know of it, yes, okay. From reading about it.
So I got to talk to these women who, when the men were gone,
mm-hmm.
as a picture of one of them, oh, my God, I'm going to get this wrong. It's the bow, I don't know the front, it's the front of the ship. What is that? The bow, whatever it is, it's the front of the ship.
Okay.
There's a picture of her, small woman, small, Italian small, with a hard hat and a welding gun.
Okay.
Gun? You know, in the front of a ship.
Okay.
Welding. And so she talked about, and they all talked about, what this was like. And when you hear her talk about it, she's, and you have to go back and understand where these women came from. Allison, you know where I'm going, right? With this for a minute? Okay, you know where I'm going, right? Okay, follow me for a minute. And when I sat down and I talked to all of them, Benny, right? You know, my Aunt Lee, who Uncle Ralph, to the war. Everybody's to the war. Not the women. Although I will say my Aunt Frances served, so not all the women stayed home. I got about a split deal with my women relatives, both my aunt and my uncle. They served. Full of a family that served. But when I talked with them about this time, they were so happy. That when they were telling me about it, they were smiling. They were talking about the fact, and they had these pictures, right, black and whites. I mean, it was really interesting to see what they saved and collected. And one of them had like a sketch, a portrait. And at one point, there was this sketch, a portrait, with about three women in a small space with these rivets building big battleships. And when they talked about it, they talked about how, thank you, Winnie the Welder. When they talked about it, they talked about how freeing it was, how liberating, you know, how they got up every day and had a purpose, you know, how they all gathered, how they all got to be in community with each other. And it wasn't just about riveting. The women were called to do things during World War II that they never thought they'd be called to do. And not only did they step up to the challenge, but these folks are some of the most unsung heroes of our time. Just like the movie Hidden Figures. When you saw that movie about these African-American women and the becoming cornerstone for a NASA program that could have failed had it not have been for those women. I mean, think about it. That if that flight failed, there would be nothing for us to talk about. But today, what have we forgotten? A year without men. You know, it is a 12-point guide to inspire and empower women. But it doesn't mean that we're talking about a hate campaign for men. It's not. But it's to remind us of what we've done, how far we've come, and how much more we have to do. That's why joining me here today, and I'm excited about this. Benny, we're going to skip the break.
All right.
I'm so excited about this today because sometimes when I talk about women and I say things like a year without men, I get these emails, and Allison's going to talk about the email thing. We're not saying that we see ourselves as a world without men. That's like the Amazonian women and Wonder Women. That's like where they come from, that they did that. We're talking about what we have to remember about how powerful we really are. Allison, thank you for this. Thank you for the reminder. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate it.
So how did I represent sort of a scenario that many of the young people can't relate to? Because many of them, like World War II is like, you know, World War II is like dial-up internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. We know it was a thing, but it's like so, like, not a thing. Yeah. But you remember that time that I'm referencing?
Absolutely. And I think that you did such a good introduction for the book because I've had the same reaction from people, a year without men. It's not a hate against men. It's not anti-men. It's a remembering. And I so love how you put that. I mean, if you look back at World War II, you know, women did, they filled in these gaps where, you know, men were at war and they had to go to work. But when the men came home, the women went back home. And so it was just a moment in time where we were able to see what women were capable of. But, you know, it took a very long time for women to get back into the workplace. And what's so interesting about the book is, for me, this book, that's what it was. It was not just a remembering. It was me able to find out who I truly was. And I'm not sure I forgot. Sometimes you think about, well, did I forget or did I never have the opportunity? And for me, my life totally changed. I mean, if you would have spoken to me on June 29, 2018, I would have told you, I have this beautiful life. I had troubles in my life, but my business was great. I had two wonderful daughters and a loving husband, and I was really looking forward to all the possibilities and opportunities. And then on June 30th, 2018, my husband came home. I was at the kitchen counter. He came home from the gym. And what felt to me out of nowhere, he said, I'm leaving you. I'm leaving you to go date other women. We could still have family vacations together. We could still go out for dinner, but I'm out. I'm done. And for me, that was that structure that I lived within, the family structure. You know, we were partners, we were best friends. But within a two-week period, my biggest male client for 25 years left me. I had no, everything just kept falling apart. And then I got invited to become the chief financial officer of an all-day woman hospital where only women work. And literally within a two-week period, there were no men other than like my father and my brother. And I was surrounded only by women. And the experience, you know, I was in a lot of pain and a lot of grief. It was very difficult. But at the same time, not having men in my life, I started to remember, or I started to learn the places that I hide, the places that I compromise, the pressures that I felt, you know, for 30 years in business, the places where I didn't feel I was welcome. So this book is really more of an awakening, of a remembering, of a movement for women to kind of look for those places that were not fully empowered, that we could go out into the world and find true equity and true equality.
You know, I want to talk about this in so many ways, but I want to go back to something I said to you before we started the show. And that is, I work with women. I work with women in a lot of groups. I work with women in recovery. I've worked with young women, youth, you know, on spiritual year-long journeys. I mean, things like that. What happened this year, though, for me was I realized that there's a part of what I could do that I'm not doing. And I got the epiphany in a couple of different ways. One was when I mentioned Gloria Steinem and nobody even understood who I was talking about. You know, one person thought I was talking about the owner of the Yankees, which that was not Steinem, it was Steinbrenner or somebody. But what I realized is we're not passing the baton. You know, my Native American friends, I've spent time with them, and I've learned more about their indigenous cultures than I think we know about the history or herstory of women. And I think that you and I, in writing this book, you stepped out in a bold move of courage. Help me reframe this. If it's not remembering, there is something that has to happen with us as women, Allison. And the reason I say it is two things happened in the past couple months. One, I was talking with people in my women's group, and I said, you know, it's exciting. We may actually get an equal rights amendment on the floor of the Senate. Equal rights for women. And almost unanimously, the cry was, what do you mean? We already have equal rights. Okay. And then I didn't know how to walk that back. And I realized I have to explain it. The second thing that happened was 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I've talked about it on air. And I wonder why we are not hearing more from the women in our government about the fact that an equal pay for women bill were shot down in the Senate because they were afraid of frivolous lawsuits. So do you understand where I'm going and how it points directly to your book?
Absolutely. I think women are walking around thinking we've made it. Right. Yes, and what's really interesting, if you look at statistics, you know, I always say numbers don't lie. They don't tell the whole story. But if you look at the statistics, in 1991, men and women were graduating college, you know, at the same rate. So we're talking about, like, 30 years fast forward. Look at where we are. In the S&P 500, only 5% of women are CEOs. Only 20% of women are on boards. I think men and women enter the workforce equally, but men are twice as likely to get promoted in the first 5 years. So I think women are kind of in their own cocoon. You know, they're going to work every day. But the most interesting thing I think that happens is when women don't have success at this point, they think there's something wrong with them. I think there are two things going on. One, we don't realize that we're not as far ahead as we think because we're not looking around us, like, and we're not paying attention. Like, you think about the equal pay, you look around, you know, who's the CEOs, who, you know, how many, even just a woman being president, you know, it's not happening for us. And at the same time, when I work with women individually, they're blaming themselves. If I was so great, then I would have gotten that job. If I was so great, I would have gotten that promotion. And I don't think people realize that, you know, the game is rigged against us to begin with. And we need to kind of recognize it. We need to kind of shore up how we feel within ourselves. And we need to go out there and demand that equity and equality. So the world is not offering it to us. And at some point we accept less. And then we just think that things are different than they really are. It's very complicated because when I talk about it, women start to worry. Well, what do you mean I'm not equal? What do you mean that, but we're not. But we have so much potential to get there. And I think that's really what the discussion is.
It was pointed out to me. Something in your book was pointed out to me. Little funny story. Not so funny after I reflected upon it. Yeah. But there were a couple things you point out in your book that are just pivotal. And I hope you're taking this book and you're teaching. I hope you're teaching worldwide. I really hope, you know, that Allison, that what you're doing is you're taking the tenets of this book. And you're using it as a way to not just educate, but beyond inspire, say there's something we can do because it's daunting. When you look at the scale and then you look and you drop down to women of color, that it's not just disturbing. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
Beyond anything that you can imagine. And yet, I'm okay, you're okay. You know, don't ruffle any feathers.
Absolutely.
And so let's talk about how it's playing out in our country for a moment. Now, if we were in Germany, the Chancellor of Germany, you'll get any more powerful than her.
Right.
I mean, she is bold. She is well-spoken. She, you know, who's in charge of Germany? Raise your hand. Yes. Yes. Ambassador Merkel. Thank you so much for that. But it's interesting as I'm watching this. Young people, like 13, 14, so believed in a woman named Kamala Harris. They really did. For whatever reason, she sparked fire. I was talking to a couple of them the other day, and they said, "Where did Kamala Harris go?" I said, "What do you mean?" She said, these two young girls said, "Where is she? You know, why isn't she taking on voter rights? You know, why isn't, I mean, these are 13-year-olds that were like, my mom's helping me write a letter to the president. Mm-hmm. You know, like, where did Kamala Harris go?" And I ask myself the question because it is a microcosm for something bigger. Tell me what you think the bigger idea is because it's all in your book.
The bigger, I'm not exactly sure what you're getting at.
The bigger idea of how we can become invisible, even at the most visible positions in the world.
Well, first of all, you know, media coverage is everything.
Thank you.
Yeah, if we just look at that, I mean, media coverage is male-centered. Right? And it's how these perceptions are developed. I mean, the younger kids are watching, you know, the Instagram, the TikTok, all of that, the news coverage. We're always talking about what women are wearing. We're always talking about how they look, we're always looking for the moments. Even if you look up, you know, about the presidential election, you look at the coverage. Like, how much coverage did they have about Amy Klobuchar eating salad with a comb? You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, you have Donald Trump, you know, and it's not a political show, I know, but it was just interesting how the coverage is. And we're always kind of looking for women, you know, those parts. We're judging women based on not the most interesting thing about women, and then we hold them to a higher standard. That's what's so interesting. Even if you look at Hillary and Donald Trump, I know these are complex issues, but the media perpetuates it. So there's not a place in our society. Corporate America perpetuates the inequality and the lack of equity. The media does. The media keeps portraying women as less than. Even if you look at what happened just with Victoria's Secret, they decided to get rid of all those young angel women. But then they picked women in their 30s who are very wealthy, who are very educated, who've had a lot of work done on themselves, to that be the new woman. How is that the everyday woman? So it's almost like they just upped the age by 10 years, right? And so we're never given those models out there that we could look towards. And if we are, those models are not treated equally or the equality in the media and everything else. So it's kind of like we have to, you know, it's a lot of work, right? It's a lot of work to see the truth. And then it's a lot of work to empower ourselves. There's so much against us, but at the same time, I fully believe that there's an opening in this moment for women to rise up, to come forward, to start their own businesses, to demand that there's more equity in corporate America. We have this moment, but like I think you're getting to, we have to be aware of it, and we have to be courageous enough to come out and say, hey, this is not working, and I'm valuable enough to be in that same place as every man. And that's the thing. We let the outside world change how we feel about ourselves. And so it's an inside job, but the outside world is not helping.
Well, and one of the things you talk about in the book, and I want to really roll right into it, is really been, it's an interesting paradox. There's nothing that is more shocking than a breakup, a divorce, a blindsided divorce. And what we do as women is we ask others, right? What do you think I should do? How do you think I should do it? And the reason I'm bringing this up, maybe you didn't do that, your divorce, but we have this sense of us that we will ask. We will ask, what do you think? You know, and sometimes it's seen as a point of weakness and vulnerability. I learned this as being the only woman manager at the telephone company and facilities management for 10 years. I learned not to ask somebody else's opinion of something. And yet at the same time, we are so quick to it, another person's point of view. Do you find that kind of women-sided?
Absolutely. Well, I think also because we're always judged in a way, you know, the put-downs are very subtle. You know, you look, I'm not as successful as my male counterparts. I think after a while, again, you say, well, there must be something wrong with me. And the minute you think it's you, you're going to believe what other people say. And it's so interesting that was one of my biggest realizations, that this idea that just because someone says it doesn't mean it's true. And that's like the flip side of it, right? That not only are we asking people what we think, but we're believing what people tell us. And it's only because of we're looking at our life. And again, we think if we were so wonderful, why wouldn't it be different? So then we go to the outside world and say, you tell me what's best for me. You tell me how to do this, and then I'll know. So yeah, women are filled with a lot of doubt because of the past. And for me, that was one of the biggest realizations. If I didn't get that, and if I didn't turn to me, I was going to be believing that there's something wrong with me. My husband left me. I'm not worthy. I can't make it. I mean, I could tell a really great story at this point, right? I have all the makings for a story that my life will never be great again. I'll never have the grandkids story with the big family. But I realized that that's the story. That's the expectation that I was sold. And that's the expectation I held on to. So unless we go back to ourselves and we start asking ourselves, you know, what's our truth, right? That's a hard thing to do. What works for us, the whole world is going to tell us. So I don't think there's anything wrong with asking people for advice, but we have to be strong enough within ourselves to know who we are, right, and then to move forward. It's really tricky, but at the same time, that was one of my biggest moments, just because someone says it doesn't mean it's true.
I'm being interviewed more recently, especially now with the new technology, and I'm going to be out in the world talking about it a little bit. So I'm going to ask some interesting questions, Allison. I'm going to ask you a couple of them.
Okay.
You know, I was asked a question this is a person that knew about my working career, starting in the mailroom, going from homeless to starting in the mailroom to corporate executive at AT&T, right? To the point where I couldn't do it anymore. It was out of integrity for me. I had an epiphany moment. Okay. An alien took over my body and gave me enlightenment. I'm not kidding. That's true. It's true. But I get asked interesting questions about that part of my life now that I've started to share it. One of the questions I got asked was, you know, Pat, in your corporate career, you've talked about a few things. But is there anything that you feel that you made a contribution to change policy, procedure beyond your day-to-day job? And the point was, and this was a little sarcastic, snarky question by him. It was a little like, seriously, you talk about the job, you know, you're just a number, 66147. Can you believe I remember my ID number, 66147? I mean, is that funny? And so he was basically saying, don't even bother talking about it. You really didn't make a difference. But let's talk about this. Because if we don't start to talk about and honor our contributions, Allison, we're not going to be able to help other women do that.
Right.
Can you talk to the points in time, even now, where you feel you're contributing, where you feel you're on the edge of helping others?
Well, it's so interesting. If I go back to the beginning of my career when I was a lawyer at a large firm, I felt it was hard. I felt it was very hard to contribute. And what happened is I went on my own as a lawyer, but I felt the places where I contributed the most, quite honestly, was in not-for-profit humanitarian work. And it's interesting. That's where I went because I needed to feel like I could make a difference. And that's where, you know, my life really changed a lot. And then, you know, I became a life coach, but it was always outside of that corporate system because when I was in the system, I felt that I was just a number. But what's so interesting is that, you know, right after my husband left, when I got invited to come into this company called the Motherhood Center, and it's a day hospital for women with postpartum depression, it's an all-woman company. There's no men there. She actually asked her partner to leave, who was a man, so we're all women. And I really feel that I contribute. And the reason why it's so easy to contribute is because that barrier is not there anymore. There's no one rolling their eyes. There's no one judging me because I'm a woman. We're all the same. And because we're all the same, there's more collaboration. And that limit, that place where I always felt the resistance is not there. And now it's an amazing place. We save women's lives. I mean, even during the pandemic, I mean, We decided to, you know, treat these women on Zoom. And it's just a different dynamic. And I'm not saying that corporate America doesn't make a difference. Of course it does. But my individual contribution feels a lot different that I'm not fighting that one piece.
Yeah. And I think, and you know, you're going to be important for me because once we launch our technology, I'm going to create a summit. And I'm so clear about doing this. And it's not going to be the kind of summit that you hear about. You know, every time we get together, it's usually a summit where we're going to get a bunch of people on, they're going to sell you stuff. That's not what I want to create. I realize and I believe you and I could speak for you for a minute, and even Benny and Olivia. I don't want to leave men out of this because men, to me, have helped me more in my life and career than you can imagine. And I want to talk about that when we come back. But one of the things that I realized, and I'm seeing it again, is there cannot be 9 out of 10 women in a group that didn't know they were just denied equal pay. Right. And the fact that I know that that's a thing and I'm not doing anything about it, shame on me. And so when we come back, I want to talk about this. The other thing I want to talk with you about is that learning how to look at what we envision for our life versus expectations is really the key to success. You know, you are by any poke of the imagination, a successful and powerful woman. You know, went to school, became a lawyer, author, speaker, right? You are by every aspect of the imagination, that woman. And allow yourself to be vulnerable to write this book. There's nothing more powerful than vulnerability to help other people. When we come back, let's talk about the double-edged sword of the gifts that we have as women and how to use them. It's a great book. So good. Allison Carmen, everybody, we're going to take a short break. We have a couple of copies of the book to give away, A Year Without Men, a 12-point guide to inspire and empower women. And it really is that guide. And, you know, to think about this in the way, if you think about my aunts, if you think about my aunt with the hard hat on and having the joy in her face when she talked about this point of time and then what came for her, literally it killed my mother. It literally, the feeling of disempowerment that happened and how these women lived, it's just beyond anything that we can imagine in contemporary women. Let's take a short break when we come back. Hey, Benny, 1-800-930-2819, copies of this book, awesome book. When we come back, is vulnerability our greatest gift? Mm-hmm. We'll be right back with Allison Carmen.
Hi, I'm Patricia McNair, host of Divine Guidance with Patricia. And I'm here to help you live a more authentic, spiritually connected life. Join me every first and third Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Being who you are in everyday life is the key to unlocking soul wisdom within that a whole self already knows. Get ready to embrace your spiritual, mental, and emotional well-being, your whole being. Discover your gifts and strengthen your connection to spirit. We will explore earth guidance, divine truth and love, past life lessons, and so much more. So listen in to Divine Guidance with Patricia and join in your personal adventure to triggering, opening, validating, and being all that you are. For more information about me, visit divineguidance.earth.
Champion your life with me, Leanne Champion. First Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. That new gym membership might help you get fit, but what about emotional fitness? Jump into the rushing waters of personal growth. Don't waste another minute feeling unfulfilled. Visit championyourlife.com and let's do this together.
It's time to get your life back on Burn Bright Today with Jennifer Marcinelli. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn to move from the darkness of burning out to the light of burning bright. Jennifer is redefining stress and the energetic causes of burnout, shining a light on process to get your life back. For more information about Jennifer and her work, visit BurnBrightToday.com.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Join Jennifer Noel Taylor on the hit show Quantum Touch Radio, supercharging your life on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You'll take a quantum journey as well as reveal powerful yet simple steps to create more abundance, better health, emotional and mental vibrancy, and happier relationships using universal quantum touch principles. For more information, visit QuantumTouch.com.
Healing has a ripple effect. One person's healing affects everyone around them. This is where the power of sharing our stories can be so important.
Tune in to Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Megan provides you with ways of sustaining radical and powerful changes in your life. Enact the power of radical change. To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Oh, my gosh, we're fired up. Olivia, what I'd like you to do with the segment, the commercial, the dialogue that you just picked up between Allison and myself on Zoom, I want to pull that commercial out. I want to just play that as a separate segment. Benny, I know you've been streaming it live on your channel. Allison, before we continue, one, how do we find out about you? How do we get copies of the book? Because this is a bigger conversation than we've got an hour to spend. But I do know this. It is, for me, haunting me about an action I know that I can take, and I'm not 100% clear about what that is. And I'm going to be asking our listeners about it. But how do they find out about you? How do they tap into this book? I read the book. That's why I'm asking you the questions I'm asking. But tell us about you for now.
Okay. I have a great website, AllisonCarmen.com. The book is available at major bookstores and online retailers like Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I have a great podcast, 10 Minutes to Less Suffering, which you can get on Spotify or iTunes. And my email is allison@allisoncarmen.com, and I'm really interested to hear what people think about the book. I'm really interested to hear about women's experiences. Like you said, this is the beginning of a really wonderful conversation about where women are and what is possible. And again, this book is a hope. It's a hope that by revealing my experience, by revealing my experience in business, in my personal life, what could possibly be? I think that so much is possible, but we have to first kind of figure out where we stand, what the business world really offers us, and who we need to be to go out into the world and demand that equity and equality.
I want to take a page from your book and you know, follow up on that. And the page I want to take from your book is really referencing what we started to talk about before the break. And it's about this level of vulnerability. You referenced one of my mentors and what I think is one of the most incredible pieces of work. Maybe it's a documentary. Somebody should do something, a movie about his life, and that is Dr. Viktor Frankl.
Mm.
And you reference him in the book. And the way you reference him in the book was so powerful. When he's had to have an influence on you for you to have him in the book like this, right?
No, absolutely. You know, I had read his book, Man's Search for Meaning, many, many years ago. And but it didn't connect with me until my husband left, until I had that such deep level of suffering that scorched earth that I didn't think I was going to make it, that I really understood what he was talking about. You know, he talks about, and the quote I don't have on me, but he talks about, you know, life has suffering in it. And I think a lot of us, especially in the United States, like to deny that fact. But he talks how suffering is like gas, and whether it's, you know, it's a big tank or a small tank, it just fills up your tank, and we shouldn't judge it. You know, it could be something small or something big, but we have to allow it, right? We have to allow it, and it's a part of life. But at the same time, what I learned from my experience that, you know, it takes bravery to suffer, it takes bravery to cry, and then after we allow ourselves to feel it, we get to know ourselves better, we get to feel who we are, and then at that point, we have a choice what to do with it. And you know, look, he lived through the Holocaust, and that's just an unbelievable thing that he could look at suffering, right, with such courage. But he does. And so it gave me a lot of courage. And I actually wrote about him when I'm, believe it or not, in this horrible year, I actually had a breast cancer scare.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting in this doctor's office, and this woman, she kind of was this older woman. They kind of wheeled her next to me, and she lost her hair, and she was all swollen. And then I remember thinking to myself, you know, I felt healthy. I didn't know whether or not I had breast cancer. I was about to get my results. And I looked at her, and I said, what right do I have to suffer? Look at her suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And then he reminded me that we all have suffering, and we can't judge our suffering. That's what we do, especially as women. We think well, I shouldn't be feeling this. I shouldn't be feeling this hurt. I shouldn't feel that, you know, my coworker hurt my feelings. No, it's okay to feel what you feel. You know, if someone's not nice to you, it's okay to feel hurt. It's okay to feel pain. That doesn't make us weak. We're taught that women are vulnerable, they're over-emotional, and they're weak. That's not true. I say the most courageous person in the world allows themselves to feel what they feel. Vulnerability, tears, so what? It's what you do with that. What do I do with my tears? What do I do with my life experiences? And for me, I hope that I went forward with courage and resilience. And again, a lot of pain, a lot of tears, but I decided to embrace the unknown, accept my situation, and it was very difficult, and see what else was possible in my life. And I think that's what Viktor Frankl leads us to, that vulnerability is a part of life, and it's what we do with these moments in our lives that really makes us strong and courageous.
I love that you included it, because I want to ask you this next question. I believe that anyone, man or woman, that can experience a level of vulnerability the way we're talking about opens up a portal. And when you open up that portal, you're opening up a place for you to receive guidance information. In the book you wrote, and this is from Frankl, I love that you've included this, Allison. I'm so happy. This is what you say, and he says, there was no need to be ashamed of tears. I want women to hear this, right? I want everybody to hear this, because we are so ashamed of tears. No crying in baseball. No crying at work. No crying in ping pong. I cry in ping pong. There was no need to be ashamed of tears, for tears bore witness that a man or woman had the greatest of courage,
right?
Courage to suffer.
Mm.
It doesn't say to suffer for the rest of your life.
Right.
And I think that's part of your story in the book, is to move us from, you know, compare and despair to beyond empowerment, right?
Yes.
You know, we go from, you know, this compare and despair, beyond empowerment to empowerment. You know, that place within that allows us to know that we can accomplish anything. Talk to us for a minute about the conundrum of vision and expectation. Almost paradoxical.
Yes.
Whenever I talk about expectation, people say, okay, you don't have any expectations. I said, but you can have a vision.
Right.
Tell me about how you talk about it in the book.
Yeah. And I just have to say about that thing about tears. When I went to the Motherhood Center, one of my first meetings, I was meeting with a bunch of people. We're all on the board. We're all, you know, very senior, very experienced. One of the women started to cry. And I thought to myself at this moment, had I been at any other place, any other corporate business, it would have ended the meeting. She would have been reprimanded. Nobody budged. There are a group of women, one woman's crying, and as she's crying, she's talking, she got through the meeting, she said some brilliant things, and nobody cared. Because at the end of the day, who, you know, it's not how you're feeling at work that's the problem. If you put your bad behavior on someone else, that's the problem. But if you tell your coworker you're stressed or you're worried, it shouldn't impact it, you know? And I think that it's so interesting that they say women are more emotional at work, but I find men more emotional because of anger, resentment. So I just think that's really interesting that, you know, when you talk about tears and vulnerability, that has nothing to do with our brilliance and our possibilities and what we're capable of. But when you talk about vision and expectations, you're right. When you tell people, well, you shouldn't expect anything, it's almost like I find people get deflated. Like, what do you mean I shouldn't expect anything? That means I can't have what I want in my life? And we don't realize that expectations are when things, we thought things were going to be a certain way and they don't turn out that way. That has nothing to do with a vision because, you know, I believe that uncertainty is our best friend and life keeps changing and life keeps having maybe. So the expectation is when you get off the playing field because it's not the way you thought it was, right? But the vision is still there. You know, it's not, you know, the vision, the dream, it's all still possible. It's just you might not get there the way you thought. And that's what happened in my life. When my husband left me, that was the biggest expectation I had in my life, was family and the future and being together. And when that fell away, if I went with that story, my vision, there would be no vision for my life. And it took a while. When you're devastated, you don't turn up the next day and say, oh, I have a great vision. It took a while for me to kind of like get back in there and say, well, what's still left for me to experience in this lifetime? What's the vision now? So the expectation is just the past story of how you thought it was going to be. But when you kind of collect yourself and you believe in possibilities and opportunities and you heal, there's always something new for us. And just because it doesn't happen today doesn't mean it's not going to happen tomorrow, and it doesn't mean it's not going to happen next week or next month. So for me, it's, some of my visions are exactly the same and some of them are new, but I try not to let the story of how I thought my life would be get me, and that's what an expectation is.
Okay, and this is really very important because imagination is everything. I mean, any thought leader around will tell you imagination is everything. I mean, that, you know, we're talking about Viktor Frankl, we're talking about so many things, but we're mostly talking about this way for us to look at our lives and move forward. I want to ask you about this, Allison. One of the things I'm struck by is the statistics and the studies are now coming in on, I keep calling it post-COVID, but that's, I don't want to say that. The impact of the past 18 to 20 months, let's just call it that. The numbers are coming in. And one of the numbers that is barely being talked about, clearly there are numbers about rising alcoholism, the online alcoholism buying rate is close to 600% increase. There's a lot of things coming on about that. But we're now starting to get information about beyond burnout. We're talking about stress in a lot of different ways. And I want to talk with you about stressors and worries because you talk about them in the book. And is it that we just absorb more things? I mean, do we need to learn how to put up a protective shield more and yet not lose our humanity as women?
Yeah. That's a really interesting question. I do think that during the pandemic, women had more stresses on them, especially with childcare. I mean, I can't tell you, I mean, for me, I was working at a company where every single person was a woman. So there wasn't a moment where you weren't on Zoom that like three kids came flying in and then the fire alarm went off and someone had to cook lunch. And so we're all working and doing childcare. And it was a very, very, for those of us who've had children or somebody was taking care of a sick parent, it fell more on women. And statistically, it shows, and more women lost their jobs. So more women lost their jobs, and if they had a job, they had more pressure. So women had more stress during the entire pandemic. You know, it's interesting when you talk about putting up a shield. There's one thing that I've learned, that when my husband left me, the pain was so great that it would have been very easy for me to shut my heart. It would have been very easy for me to be angry, to say I don't trust people, but that would have been changing who I am. And that's the problem when we talk about humanity and shields in our hearts, that if we don't stay open, we're going to be less of who we are. And I believe the only way women are going to make a difference in this world is if they stay true to who they are, because that's going to be the essence of compassion and empathy and real change in the workplace. So how do we do that? That's a really good question. How do you keep your heart open and stay true to who you are? And at the same time, witness the things that happen in your life. And I think, and I talk about this a lot, I think the ability to tolerate uncertainty is really the key. And I talk about how men and women, you know, they suffer from the fear of the unknown the same way, but affects women more because our road is more uncertain. So I think the principles in the book, I think that if you master your relationship with uncertainty, you will have less fear and worry in your life. Because a lot of times, it's not what's happening in the moment, it's what you think this moment is going to mean for your future. So if we master acceptance and we are able to kind of be more responsive and less reactive and deal with these certain elements, I think we could be a heart, keep our hearts open and feel the world, but the world won't knock us down and we'll get up again and again and again. Not an easy practice, but I believe it's possible. And I think uncertainty is really the key.
You know, I've talked a little bit on the show, Benny has heard me do it, about the movie Black Widow. I was really looking forward to it coming out. There was an interesting turn of events, and I grew up comic books. That was my escape, so I know everything about comic books, honestly. I mean, you know, the Marvel universe, whatever you want to know, but that's just, you know, I just love it. I love Stan Lee was like a genius guy. But Black Widow is one of the most interesting characters, and what I love about talking about this, it's not that it's a comic book or a superhero. It's what happened to the Scarlett Johansson character, Black Widow, somewhere between two Avenger movies. Somewhere. And you start to watch her change. You start to see her change from, you know, this badass Black Widow spy that you know very little about to this incredibly vulnerable Avenger who gives the ultimate sacrifice. And the movie Black Widow has been sort of on the shelves for like a long time. And I was looking forward to it because I had a sense it would talk about her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want to give out the storyline because I want people to see it if they want to see it. But boy, when you take a look at her journey and you see what changed her, you do get the sense of how powerful our vulnerability is.
Mm-hmm.
But you also get the sense that we also need to focus and harness that power. How do we do that, Allison? How do we as women help each other? Because we've never really been, according to a lot of statistics, really supportive of each other.
Mm-hmm.
But how can we help women now of every age harness that power?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I try in the book to give exercises and things to help women harness it. Again, I believe your relationship with uncertainty is going to be the key. Because what happens is the minute we don't like what's happening, we change our plan. The minute we don't like what's happening, we say, I'm not capable. The minute we don't like what's happening, we kind of quit our jobs or we don't stay in the workforce because we can't think it'll ever be different. So I think mastering certain elements of things within ourselves really matters. But I also like what you said about how do we support each other. And, you know, what's so interesting is that now being in an all-woman environment, and I love and I think it's wonderful, I think we're not respected all the time, and I think we're also taught not to respect each other. And I think that sometimes we're so we have to learn to kind of view each other. You know, of course, it's because we don't view ourselves the right way. So as we view ourselves as valuable and equal and wonderful and capable, I think we're going to start women, you know, viewing our women colleagues that way. And then we have to decide, you know, what do we want it to be like? You know, do we want collaborative, empathetic environments? And what are we willing to sacrifice? What are we willing to say to get there? And that, and what you said in the beginning, that includes men too.
It does.
It's not a movement with, you know, half the race are men. So, like, we need to be inclusive. And the book is, I'm hoping men read the book. I'm hoping men read it. I mean, they might find that there are things I talk about in the book that will help them. You know, we're talking about acceptance and uncertainty, but also understanding the female experience. And I also believe that if a man is working in a company where they're not treating people the same, they're not treating people equal, one day it'll be his turn. One day someone will get sick. One day he'll have an issue, he'll have a health issue. That company's not going to treat him well either. And so corporate America needs to change for everybody. You know, we need to look at equity. We need to look at the entirety of people's lives. So much has to happen, but I believe that we need to change from the inside. We need to support each other. Men need to come on board, and I think it'll make for a better world for everyone. That's just how I see it.
Look, I know this hour went really quick, didn't it? It's like, where did it go? Thank you for today, but also thank you for the body of work that you're doing now and what you're going to be doing with this. Would you just take a moment for all of us and remind everyone how they can find out more about you and how they could also get a copy of the book? Would you go ahead and do that, please, Allison?
Sure.
And also social media. People can also stay in touch with you over social media and really keep in tune with what you're bringing out afresh, anew from the book, et cetera.
Absolutely. Again, the website is AllisonCarman.com. My Twitter handle is Gift of Maybe. My Instagram is Allison Carman. You can buy the book at all major bookstores and online retailers like Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And I also have a podcast, 10 Minutes to Less Suffering. And I hope to keep the discussion going because there's so much more to say. I mean, this was an experience of 1 year in my life and the realizations that I had when there were no men in my life, but there's so much more to talk about. Like you talked about politics, you know, how corporate America can change, you know, how women will be in the post-pandemic era. So there's a lot to talk about. Things change every day. But again, this book is a hope, and I believe there's so much more possible for all of us. But we have to be aware of it, right? And we have to be willing to be open and vulnerable and keep our hearts open and really work on the places that we hide, so we could be fully embodied and value ourselves and go out into the world as women and really start using our voice to make a difference for ourselves, our families, and the world.
And I love one of the messages as well is it's not them against us. It's them and us. And, you know, that's one of the powerful messages, not only in this book, but it's been part of your work. It's been part of your passage. Allison, one last question. What's your personal message, or would you like to leave us with here today? And, again, thank you.
Like I said, I feel very hopeful, and that I hope women will start looking at the places that they don't feel equal, or they feel stressed, or they feel worried, and they stop blaming themselves. And they stop making it about what they can't do and what they're not capable of and it's their fault, and really start looking at the systems around them and start looking within and seeing the places that they don't love themselves, that they don't value themselves. And I really hope that my book helps them. Like I said, there are a lot of great exercises and there's a lot of great information. Like you said, there's so many wonderful things happening around the world. There's so many fabulous women and so many people who are just ready to give information for empowerment, love. And I just really believe that women are warriors. I believe they're fabulous business people, and I think they're full of potential. And I think this is an amazing moment for women to really start going out there, speaking truth, making a difference, and making the world a better place.
And I'm going to remind you and I that we actually, as women that have been traveling this pathway, I don't know about you, but I really feel obligated to do more.
Absolutely.
I know I can do more. I know that there are things that I can do. Now, if you're going to ask me what that is, hopefully you and I can put our heads together.
Yeah.
And maybe we can create something.
Yeah.
Allison, thank you so much.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate it.
And thank you for your vulnerability and inspiration.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, let's take a short break. When we come back, more about vulnerability. We're going to be talking with the Pushy Broad from the Bronx because we're taking on Recovery Recharge. What is the spiritual side of recovery? And, yes, that statistic I gave about alcohol consumption, yeah, that's what's happening. We'll be right back.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program, and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Wednesday to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for around the town. Over on still 405 northbound, southbound, at Northeast 44th Street in the Newcastle area, it's heavy in both directions. Everywhere else, though, traffic is actually looking pretty good. Stay tuned for another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This time, it's Recovery Recharge Radio. This is Helen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx. And it's all about the spiritual side of recovery. Special guest, Reverend Carrie Frazier.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. President Biden is at the U.S. Capitol meeting with Senate Democrats. Before going into the meeting, he and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer walked by reporters.
We're going to get this done. We are getting it done. Thank you.
Their get-together comes after an agreement was reached on a $3 trillion budget. Biden's party is trying to lock down support for the plan, which includes expanding Medicare, fighting climate change, and investing in child care and education. The bill will move forward without Republican support, but it may not be voted on until the fall. The president is launching a new program called Operation Allies Refuge. In the midst of withdrawing all U.S. troops from Afghanistan, the Biden administration is working to safely relocate Afghan nationals who helped the U.S. during the 20-year-long war. The battle over voting laws in Texas continues today. State Senator Brian Hughes says Republicans will stay here as long as it takes as Democrats continue to protest in the nation's capital. The state Senate passed the voting bill last night, which outlaws 24-hour voting and reels in voting by mail that was expanded during the pandemic. The Health and Human Services Secretary says there's a demand for high-quality, low-cost health coverage. His comments come as over 2 million people have enrolled for health care so far during the 2021 enrollment period. It opened on February 15th and will conclude on August 15th. Drug overdose deaths during the pandemic hit the highest number ever recorded. Sarah Lee Kessler reports.
CDC data shows that deaths skyrocketed to 93,000 last year, up from 72,000 in 2019. That's an increase of close to percent. Dr. Nora Volko of the National Institute on Drug Abuse says the numbers are chilling, and she blames the COVID-19 pandemic for creating a devastating collision of health crises in America. Most of the deaths involved opioids, synthetic or otherwise.
You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
ADHD,
It's the child who can't pay attention or sit still in school, right? The answer may be yes. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or ADHD, can be complicated, and it can last a lifetime. Up to 75% of children and adolescents with ADHD have at least one additional mental disorder that requires a comprehensive approach to treatment. Learn more at moretoadhd.com. This message brought to you in partnership with ADDA, ACO, and CHAD.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
To put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharge phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Welcome, Transformation Talk Radio listeners. My name is Ellen Stewart, and I am the Pushy Broad from the Bronx. Welcome to my show, Recovery Recharged, on a brand new day, starting off the summer, second Wednesdays, 11 a.m. on KKNW Radio and Transformation Talk Radio streaming. Recovery Recharged today with my illustrious co-host, as always, the wonderful Dr. Pat. How you doing, Doc?
You know, I'm so excited about this show, and I'm excited about what we're going to talk about here today, and I'm excited about your guest as well, because this is beyond belief. This is really the tipping point. If you do not get this, it's highly unlikely sustainability is going to be in your life around recovery. But that's just my two cents. Tell us about the show today, Ellen.
Well, the name of the show is called The Spiritual Side of Recovery, and we're going to welcome the pastor, Carrie Fraser. But before that, I'm going to talk to you about a little bit about her and what we're going to cover today. Because, you know, Dr. Pat, on this show, we talk about everything. We bring it up, and we don't hold anything back because you know me as the Pushy Broad. I'm going to tell it like it is, straightforward, no BS. And we're going to uncover the really tough topics. And that's what we've spent the last year and a half talking about, recovery from every aspect and talking with the experts. And today is absolutely no different. You know, we've talked a lot about the fact that in this country and all over the world, 12-step treatment is the way that recovery works. And the most popular kind of treatment in this country is 12-step recovery. It's based on a variety of things, and one of those things constitutes the spiritual side of recovery. And there are many people in this country that maybe wouldn't venture into 12-step recovery because the moment they think about that, they think about spirituality and faith and religion, and they shy away from this because they're not really sure what it's all about. So I brought in an expert, and that expert is the Reverend Carrie Fraser. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Carrie is the Vice President of Clinical Services with National Recovery Center. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist, and she's an ordained pastor with the Presbyterian Church USA and a certified spiritual counselor. Not only have I known her for the past 14 years, but I know that she has worked over 20 years in the field of addiction. Her experience and training integrates therapeutic and spiritual care, and she endeavors to treat the whole person. She specializes in substance use disorders, spiritual, religious issues, family of origin issues, premarital and marital counseling, and grief work. And this is what I love about Carrie. She truly believes that it is her sacred honor to journey with people in their healing and transformation. Transformation Talk Radio listeners, welcome Reverend Carrie Fraser. How you doing, Carrie?
I'm doing great. Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Great to have you.
Thank you.
Dr. Pat, why don't you talk to us a little bit about the info we took up about the Gallup poll and how Americans feel about God?
Yeah, I think this is really interesting given the city that I live in now and where I grew up. I grew up on the East Coast, New York, New Jersey area, very different. If you gave this Gallup poll over there, you'd get a different answer than what you had in the Seattle area. But the Gallup poll did ask people, and this is something now that's even more, more dominant. And they asked people if they believed in God or universal spirit, right? And this number of this poll of Americans, you know, talked about the fact that like 74-75% said it's important or fairly important in their lives. And you might think to yourself, 74, yeah, this is not Rome. Like, if you took this poll in Rome, Italy, it would be like 99.9% maybe. But this is a big number. And what people are saying is, yeah, we do believe. Now, where we get a little bit different is what we believe in. And then let's talk about how spiritual belief is a cornerstone of recovery, and that's really what we're talking about today. It's a cornerstone. And by the way, if I can just chime in real quick, I don't want to chew up a lot of time. People have asked me, who do I think is responsible for the spiritual spin in the 12-step programs? And I have two answers. One, Carl Jung, without a doubt. And if you want to go look at some of the early writings and early letters, there's a letter from Bill W. to Carl Jung. Took Bill 30 years to thank Carl Jung. But if you find that out, you'll find that the whole spiritual experience thing came from a letter. And Carl Jung had said, basically, I can't help this person anymore. I cannot help Roland H. anymore. He needs to have a spiritual experience. And sent him out and said, go get one. Number one. Number two, the second more influential in my mind was a visit that the whole Bill W. team did and Marty Mann to a small place in Kent, Connecticut called High Watch. And that is known for the teachings of Emma Curtis Hopkins, a New Thought type person. So that's my two cents on spirituality, but also on spirituality and substance abuse for me.
Well, of course, prevalent in the 12 steps and comes right in from the beginning and the second step about having spiritual experiences. So, Carrie, let's put this to you. Based on your experience as a pastoral counselor in the addiction field, what does a spiritual director do in treatment exactly? Just as a beginning for us to know.
Yes, I think the role for a spiritual director is to be that safe place that someone can come in and start to explore what spirituality may look like, especially when they're a part of a 12-step program, because they get to that second step and are trying to understand, what does this language mean to me? Especially if that has been something that's been absent from their life or they have some woundedness in that area, to be able to provide them a safe space to come and start to unpack what that's going to look like, maybe reform what that language means for them than maybe it did in their upbringing, what it meant to them previously in their life, and build some spiritual practices that will help them connect with themselves, help them connect with other people, and definitely help them connect with a higher power, whatever that understanding is for them. So I think having the spiritual director role is an added person and a separate person from the rest of their clinical team, that they can just come in and talk about spirituality and not have it necessarily tied into other areas, but it's that safe place for them.
See, the most popular question that everybody outside the 12-step treatment program, the most popular question they ask, and I want to go right to it, is people assume that 12-step recovery is a religious program. Give me an idea from your counseling what your definition would be as the difference between religious and spiritual when it comes to 12-step treatment.
Sure. So, and I think that's a really important thing for people to be able to talk through and think about, because sometimes people want to separate them out completely. And you can be a religious person and also be a spiritual person and weave those pieces together, or you can have them very separate. So when we're talking about spirituality, it is our personal, individual relationship with something that we are connecting with that helps guide us in our life. A religious identity is that we are a part of a group that has a structure and form that we have decided this is a part of how I understand how to move through life. So then you have the corporate kind of the corporate connection with other people, and then you have your own personal individual relationship. And that's where they can also weave and integrate together. And I think that can be, if someone wants to take that journey, that's an added layer of their foundation and their recovery, is to have those two weave together. You can also practice them separately, and if you're diligent about practicing them, you're going to find the same gifts in that.
When I first walked into the rooms in 1984, I had no idea this had anything to do with spirituality of any kind. How about you, Dr. Pat? Did you have any idea that this was going to be about?
No, none. I mean, I think if you kind of reflect back on where a person is, I mean, being at the point of desperation is an understatement. You know, talking about being at a bottom. And I think that you have an iota of it, because you reach such a point where you surrender. And at least that's my experience. There's someplace you've gotten through in your life, well, this last time was way too much. There's a point of surrender. I didn't know it at the time, but that point of surrender is what I call a spiritual intervention. But you don't know it as that. And it may take you a while to get there, right?
Carrie, what's your experience with the patients that walk in? Are they immediately buying into the spiritual thing?
Well, I think the language is what catches people up. And so one of the other ways that I talk about spirituality is that we all have a life force. And so that life force, and even, you know, think about an active addiction, that life force is what's driving people to survive what's going on in their life at that time. And so when they get to that point of I need help, and that place of surrender, that to me is that spiritual experience. They just necessarily don't have the language to call it that. But their deeper life force is compelling them to do something different to survive. And that is, to me, that spiritual, that deeper spiritual connection that is helping push them to get help, to help push them to get to a place that's going to help them have that transformation.
So the first step in recovery is I am powerless over my addiction. My life has become unmanageable. The second step is became willing to accept that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. So that power greater than myself is something that goes on in treatment and goes on in the rooms. So one doesn't necessarily have to believe in God to be a part of that and to understand that. How else can they understand a power greater than themselves, Carrie?
Sure, and I think that the language itself, a power greater than myself, is so important and so incredibly powerful to start to look at. I need to build relationships with something that's not just me and my own thinking and my own ego. And instead, I need to find other people, other things in my life that will help give me some guidance, help me process through ideas that I have. If I'm trying to make a decision, that I have somebody else besides my own brain trying to guide and direct me. So that power greater than myself, it can be if you're doing group therapy, it can be your therapy group because that collective is greater than my own thinking. It can be a 12-step meeting, your fellowship that you're a part of. It can be a relationship with a therapist. It can be a connection with God or whatever language people use to talk about the divine or something greater than themselves and their own mind. I think our minds can talk us in or out of anything. And I think especially in earlier recovery, people haven't learned to be able to kind of trust that intuition part. And so they need other people and other things to help give that guidance and help them sort through what they're thinking.
So maybe they can also trust that one of the powers greater than themselves is a good recovery coach. What do you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, Dr. Pat, how do you feel about the spirituality part of this program? Does it resonate with you?
I will tell you that for me, I don't even talk about spirituality as a part of the program. It's a way of life for me. And, you know, I can probably try to talk about when that epiphany happened or when it didn't happen or how it happened. But it starts out with an introduction in a program, whether it's AA, NA, it doesn't matter, any place, even if it's not any of those programs. But if you reach out to get support, you know, like if you take a look at what we're talking about, NRC in Nashville, and you take a look and you look on their site, you look at Sober Living, you're really talking about, wait a minute, you know, we're here to help you change your life. Right? This is a change your life conversation. Now, there are some people, I think, that can go through this without a strong spiritual foundation. I don't know many of them, but I certainly know that this got me pointed into a way of living that I didn't know would be so powerful. See, it's powerful to have a way of living that is spirit-driven. Every day I wake up and I ask the question, what is mine to do today? That's my meditation. You know, some people do the prayer of St. Francis, whatever you do. But that became mine after memorizing all the other prayers. I boiled it down to what is mine to do today. I cannot imagine my life without a strong spiritual practice. I just can't. I mean, I want to ask you about this question. There's an illusion that getting sober or getting clean is the most difficult part of the journey. I don't know about you two, but getting sober and clean was the easy part of the journey. Sober living. Now, ladies, that's a whole different conversation. Anybody want to take that on? Carrie, you want to take that on?
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Well, and I think part of the illusion piece early on for people can be that I've gotten sober, and if there is also this spiritual connection, that somehow it wraps a protective bubble around me, and so the things that happen in life aren't going to happen to me anymore. And then we all know that life continues, and so the hardships in life continue also. And that's the sober living part, is learning how to move through the next hardship that comes and the next challenges that come. And recovery and having a spiritual life doesn't keep us from having those experiences. It teaches us how to walk through them. It teaches us how to stay connected with ourselves and with other people as we face those. And I think that's a glitch in the early part for some people, that they want this to be, okay, now I have my bubble wrap around me from the world and I'm going to be okay.
You know, I completely understand, and I agree with both of you. The reason that I became a recovery coach was exactly the reason that you mentioned, Dr. Pat, because just stopping the drink or the drug was only the beginning of sustaining and change and real change in your life, which is exactly what this transformation process is, because it is a transformation process, which is exactly why I was attracted to Transformation Talk Radio, because it's all about the change beyond just not picking up a drink or a drug. And the words that we use in spirituality are really important. The surrendering part of it, right? It is so difficult for everybody, especially in early recovery, to let go of the fact that what they have been doing their whole life has to change. That's a very scary thing. And sometimes the way to lessen your fear is to understand that someone else is walking with you. And sometimes that is a something else, okay, in the spirit of things. There are many clients that I deal with all the time. Some of them are spiritually involved, some of them are not. But every single one of them does not deny that the universe moves in its own way, in its own pattern. And going along with the universe or something beyond themselves is the only way to sustain recovery. So what happens when you get into a room, Carrie, with all of these people that have all different faiths and beliefs? What's their commonality? How do you forge ahead?
Well, I think the commonality is that people want to be well, they want to feel connection, and they want to be accepted, and they want to be loved. And so I think that's the commonality, is people want to be loved. And so how being able to find the language that people can share in that together, but it's okay to experience it differently, and it's okay to have different spiritual practices. I think that when you can feel confident in that, then what other people are sharing, you don't feel like you have to defend what your practices are, and instead you can embrace theirs and learn something different. And sometimes it strengthens your own practice because you know it really helps you know why this is important to you. And other times it kind of expands things. Like, I really like what that person's talking about. I'm going to try that. Or they mentioned a book. They mentioned a meditation practice. I'm going to see what that is like. So I think being able to share people's experiences and know that it's okay for me to be able to process this, because everyone in here wants the same thing.
And it's a long and difficult journey, don't you think, Dr. Pat? It's not easy.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what I think about it is exactly what I just want to reflect on what we're talking about. And, Carrie, what you said is, you know, what I love is if we could get to this place, and certainly there are many avenues where acceptance is the first step. And that means acceptance for where you are, acceptance for the fact that you're still drinking and you're coming in the rooms, no problem. Acceptance that, you know, there's more than one spiritual focus or religion. There are people all over the world experiencing sobriety and getting clean. And we don't talk about it because conversations and shows like this, and we've had a conversation where you're not supposed to talk about it on radio. Well, I don't think that's what Bill meant. But here we are because we have to help people. And I want to talk about this. The hardest part for me, and I glommed onto it because I thought this chapter was written for people like me. And also the other two guys that I was with, they thought too. It's called We Agnostics. And I will tell you, that a chapter called We Agnostics mentions God, spirit, universe, higher power. A chapter called We Agnostics, my favorite chapter of any book. The huge trick about that is I read it and I went back and I said, this is a joke. God's spirit is mentioned 111 times in this chapter. And my sponsor said, no, I think you counted wrong. Now, this is a brilliant man. He said, it's not. Why don't you go back and read it again? Because I got a different number. So I go back and read it again, and I said to Bearded Bill, okay, it's 112 times underlined it, circled it, different color codes in this chapter. I still have a copy of it. Went back. He said, no, I got a different number. What did you guys get? You get a different number? Yeah, we got 110. Go back and do it again. Within a week, I had read this chapter 5 times, and I get why he did it. It's not even close to be about we agnostics, is it? But it presents the most challenging aspect of sobriety in a way that I think anybody can understand it, because you can pick and choose whatever you want from that chapter. What do you both think?
Carrie, what do you think?
Yeah, I think we agnostics is a rich chapter for people to be able to do some exploring. And there are times I think that they feel like when they see the title that they are questioning why they've been asked to read it. It can also start to lead to those conversations about what are the barriers that are placed in your own life that have made that difficult to be able to explore what your spiritual life looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So even when the discomfort happens from reading that chapter, it can then lead to the breakthrough conversation of what do I want for my life? Why am I resisting or having the experiences, the defenses that I'm having about reading this?
Yeah. I want to ask each of you, and can we do this? I really want to know, you know, I mean, I want to talk about this, the barriers, but I'm just curious, you know, that question you asked me a little differently. So how did the spiritual journey help you find your voice? And I'm asking you both, because I'm asking everybody, because clearly there's something about this deal right here that people find their voice. I mean, it's almost as if you're sitting in a room and you have nothing to say until this happens, and then all of a sudden you can't shut up. But how did it help you find your voice? And I don't mean just in sobriety, but I'm serious. My life today, you know, the God of my understanding is either everything or it's nothing. The God of my understanding either is or it isn't. And I decided to choose that like it is. But how about you two?
Carrie, first of all, give us a little bit of an idea what brought you spiritually into the field of substance misuse, because you certainly do a great job. So what drove you there?
Well, I think part of it is my spiritual journey, is that I love working with people, and I knew that that's what my life mission was going to be. And I also then wanted to connect the importance of my spiritual life into that, so that my passion and my vocation would match and they would meet with one another. And so I, in my early 20s, was working in an adolescent substance abuse treatment center, and the spiritual piece wove right into that. And it has just always been a part of how I have practice therapy and led groups, and then had the opportunity to really hone in on the spiritual care and have that really be a big chunk of what I did, meeting with clients and patients and doing groups and individual work around spirituality. So it's, I think, because it is the foundation for me that as my career has changed paths, that has just been a part of it. Because it's the only way I know how to live my life is as a spiritual person. And so the roles that come into my life match that, because it's how I orient myself.
That's a wonderful thing. For me, Dr. Pat, you got the key word there. You said surrender. When I went into the rooms in 1984, I was at the lowest of the low. I didn't know which end was up. And I, like you, walked into an Al-Anon room, and they said to me, you belong someplace else. We need to take you next door. which is what they did. And I'll tell you something. The only reason I went is because this cute guy escorted me into the... anonymous room and said, come this way. And I said, oh, okay, let's see what this is all about. That's exactly why I walked in. But I was at such a low point in my life that I said, I will do anything. And anything meant I'm going to follow directions, because I didn't want to think anymore. I had nothing going for me. Everything was caving in on me. And when you get to the point where the whole world is caving in on you, all you want to do is to be saved in some way. Save me, help me, get me out of this. And the only thing they told me to do was shut up, listen, and follow directions. And I said, you know what? I have nothing else to lose. I have absolutely nothing else to lose. So here it was. I was totally powerless. And then the second step came along and it said to me, my God, something greater than myself is going to make me more sane. Let's see what that is. And then we get reinforced. We begin to work this program. And like they say in the rooms a million times, the miracles will come. Okay, and they use that word miracle, so it has to come from spirituality somewhere, because miracles don't just materialize without something else happening. So even if you can't explain it or you don't want to acknowledge it, you have to understand that you begin to feel better. And when you begin to feel better, especially where we've come from and how far down it's been for us and how tough it's been, I'll take anything. And if that's what miracles are, I want more of it. And that's how it worked for me, for sure. So tell us a little bit more about what's going on at Nashville Recovery Center. Give us an idea of what that's all about and the work that you do.
Yeah, because I also referenced Sober Living Cap. And I think that's something we don't talk about. We don't talk about, like, life.
Yeah, so what we have created and built here is we really wanted there to be a longer-term step-down program for people who have been in residential treatment or that they've been trying to do this on their own at home and they just know that they need extra support. So we have structured sober living that includes clinical programming, and then they can continue to step down from an PHP, partial hospitalization program level, to IOP, intensive outpatient program level, live in our sober living homes, attend meetings, have case management, have therapy, go to 12-step meetings, which we also have various fellowships that meet in our big room here every day of the week so that they can actually do that here while they're getting ready to kind of practice that out in Nashville itself. Then they can move to our apartments. We have set down apartments, and they can be part of our outpatient program and then move into our alumni. So potentially someone can stay here. We've had people stay here a year, year and a half, and then they were ready to move into their own apartment. They were working. They had a sponsor. They were sponsoring other people, had their home group. I mean, they felt safe enough and confident enough that they could step out into living on their own or living with a roommate. So it's really trying to give people that support, that structured support, so that the longer we can keep them connected, the better chance they'll have of having long-term sobriety and recovery.
Mm-hmm. So everybody starts off with working the steps, and they begin their spiritual journey. Do you find that men and women approach spirituality differently?
I think one of the differences can be with how women tend to be more communal in how they form relationships. So they will be more likely to be comfortable doing, like, going to a yoga class or attending a meditation group, or maybe they're used to being more communal and a lot of, and sharing about their spirituality. Men, that's usually an area of discomfort coming in, especially with the isolation of addiction, that to then be able to start to share with other people and share their spiritual life and their understandings with other people, that can be difficult in the beginning. Because it's vulnerable. It's very vulnerable to share what your belief system is or your lack of or what you're struggling with. So I do feel that sometimes women they're used to talking in groups more often than men about those more vulnerable places. So they're able to start to process their language and their understanding differently earlier on.
So if someone comes into the rooms and they sit down with you and they're talking about spirituality in the beginning, what are some of the difficulties that come across in early recovery when it comes to spirituality? What are you coming across, some of the barriers? Why won't they be as open as you'd like them to be?
I think family of origin or religion of origin pieces oftentimes are a barrier, that there's some type of wounding that happened early on in life, whether it was feeling like they were forced to attend services, whatever their family's religious tradition was, or there was what they were taught or given was punishing or a judgmental understanding of God. And so that can create a barrier. And definitely if there's been any like religious abuse, if there's been a violation of a religious leader in their life,
right.
Or if there's been abuse within their family and their family identified as being a religious family, then that can also be a barrier of trying to understand this. Why would I want to have this relationship with a God that I have been taught was scary, judgmental, punishing, or that didn't protect me from these things that happened in my life growing up, or hasn't protected me in my adult life as I've had things that have happened. So I think that's one of the definite barriers to begin to start to work through, and also working on what is someone's understanding. I often call it like the Santa Claus version of God, that I either get rewarded or punished. And so if I'm good, I'm going to get the reward. But if something painful happens in my life, then I must be a bad person. And so being able to start to create a different understanding of who God can be or what a higher power can be that doesn't have such a pendulum swing in what happens in our life and if that means we're rewarded or punished.
That's really very interesting and much more intense than we're sometimes led to believe. So spiritual counseling can be very effective in many different ways in eliminating some of those barriers.
Yeah.
So what do you say to someone that has completely lost faith? How do you turn them around?
Well, I think you start with what are they looking for? And take out of the room that there needs to be any definition of anything right now, but what is something that they can start with that will help, some kind of practice that will help them get some relief in their life? And that may be reading some type of devotion or meditation book and finding a word in that book that they can just kind of carry with them through the day and see what happens with it. It could be a journaling practice. It could be going for a walk and being aware of nature. And one of the things, again, like especially early recovery, the isolation piece, is just being able to see, oh my gosh, the sun is up and it's a beautiful day and I'm listening to the birds sing and I haven't even been aware that birds have been singing for the last 3 or 4 months or however long it might be.
Yeah, 3 or 4 decades. Just saying, like for the past 3 or 4 decades, birds, what's a bird?
Yes. And so starting to build on those pieces of let's take all the language away from it and go have an experience and then let's talk about what that experience was like and what it did for you.
So, Dr. Pat, do you think you've had a few spiritual awakenings in your time in recovery?
You know, I want to talk about this because I want to ask you both about it. The answer is yes. And once that happened to me, I realized that I had had them before, right? So it's kind of like there's this new level of awareness and awakening that happens. And many people have asked me to describe it and explain it. And, you know, there's not a quick answer, and there's not an easy definition, and there's certainly not an easy description. Every one of us is different. We're going to feel it different. You know, we're going to experience it different. Many people ask about what I think about Bill W.'s experience. And, of course, I know a lot about that and Belladonna and a few other things. And, of course, it doesn't really matter to me. You know, your version of a spiritual experience is unique to you. And none of us is here to judge that. You know, if you're talking to fish and fish answer you back. By the way, that's a real thing that happened to me. Just saying.
And you weren't under the influence with no mood all
No influence,
right?
Nothing there.
Like
nothing there.
Over. Okay.
But
okay.
What I'm trying to say is you find a new way. I don't know how to say this any differently. There's a new way. I don't know about you ladies, but I really have to bring this up. My pivotal moment before even we agnostics and the universe and God of my understanding or God or any of that, I was fortunate to have a sponsor who had the three of us memorize the promises out of the gate. Don't read the book. Memorize these. And I remember reading them and then memorizing them and just wanted to punch him out. I mean, and how brilliant is this? And now when I work with women, that is it. That's the first thing you have to do with me. But it was the best because what I realized later, those are portals to spiritual manifestations, right? Or spiritual experience that lead to life-changing manifestations. And that is more powerful than anything. I mean, think about how old those are, ladies. And think about all the books now that have come out about the power of intention and the law of attraction. And to be honest with you, just go look at those promises. I'm talking about the ninth step. There are many promises. But aren't those as a part of any program? I don't care if it's AA or you take a webinar on, you know, manifesting your pot of gold. Does it get any more powerful than those? I'd like to know that from each of you.
It really doesn't, but because of what you just said, I know that Carrie and I were talking about this the other day. When people begin to experience that spirituality and those miracles and that awakening and the answer to some of the promises that you were talking about, how can that sometimes confuse somebody in early recovery? Remember, Carrie, we talked about that.
Oh, are you going to answer that? Carrie, you go first.
Okay. I think it is confusing, and it can be really scary to be able to start to see things changing and shifting, and especially when you start to feel it inside, because that's a part of also getting your feelings back and having those experiences that are deeper within, and that can be a really overwhelming experience. And I think when you were talking before, too, about having those spiritual awakenings is helping to normalize and ground people when they have those spiritual experiences, but also then help them to see the everyday things that are happening. So that your spiritual awakening for it doesn't always have to be a huge mountaintop experience. It can be an everyday experience that you made your bed today, and that is a... That's an action step that can be a spiritual awakening because it shifted something in your day. Or you looked someone in the eye that normally you would have your head down, or you said good morning or hello or whatever it is. Those are spiritual experiences to be able to have because they're creating a shift in how people are living their life, and that creates the bigger transformation. And they start to get that feedback from other people and other things, and they can feel it and experience it.
So what do you think, Dr. Pat? Were you sometimes confused by your spiritual awakenings?
First of all, confused is an understatement because I don't think you even realize you're having one. You know what I mean? I think you go through these things. And the promises start to come true, and you don't really put the dots together. I'm not quite sure when the dots. I have to tell you, I was very fortunate. I had someone that mentored us. I mean, this was in New York, and we would get in a car and we would drive to places and to read spiritual things. We drove to High Watch, right? We stepped into the place that was called, it's so spiritual here. What did Bill Wilson say? You know, you could cut the air with a knife or something. I don't remember his exact quote. But I was very fortunate to work with somebody that was hands-on. So my mentorship is also hands-on. You know, I was very fortunate to be given very challenging things to try to absorb. And to really have to memorize something that I didn't believe in. I mean, if we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. I would ask, when are we there? Are we halfway yet?
Are we halfway?
Are we there yet? You know, is that, what am I going to know? Am I going to know what phase of the development? We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. And then the pain part happened before the freedom part. But, you know, can I ask you both, don't we learn for the first time maybe in our lives through a spiritual teaching? Don't we learn how to deal with the reflection in the mirror? Right? Don't we learn that? When we look in the mirror and we see ourselves, you know, we become unrecognizable to our past. You know, we start crying and we don't know why we're crying. You know, we have moments where we feel joy and we don't know what that is. And, you know, a sponsor has to tell us. But aren't these the things we need to be reminding folks of as well? I mean, I'm sure you both have had that.
I see it every single time in my clients' eyes, and I'm sure, Carrie, you see it in the patients that you deal with. I know what that looks like. What does that look like to you when you can see that somebody's turned a corner in that way?
Oftentimes you can see it in their eyes, like the life has come back in someone's eyes.
Beautiful.
And it's just, you recognize, when you see it, you know it, because you can see it, their energy has changed, and they can be incredibly scared about what's happening because they can feel it too. But for me, it's always, I can see it in their eyes. They have come back to life.
Is that light bulb moment? I can actually see that light bulb over their head going on. All of a sudden, the lights in the house are on, and they're speechless. It is really a stunningly speechless moment, and that's marvelous. And I think the thing that we all have to remember is that recovery itself, the program itself, is a faith-based program. And that doesn't mean religious program. That means that I am now, for the first time in my life, having faith in myself and in something beyond myself, that now I'm going to get better. I'm going to get well. It's going to be different, right? That change is finally possible, that I can actually change, right? And that I don't have all the answers, but there's actually a program and something to work on and steps to look at that may provide me with those answers. And that I have to trust. And what is faith and spirituality, if not trust, blind faith, blind trust, and go outside of myself for all of the answers. So that's why I think spirituality works really, really well in 12-step recovery. And I don't think that Dr. Bob and Bill could have succeeded without that component in recovery. It would not have been as successful.
No, because, I mean, this is what I said to you earlier. I mean, you know, I love becoming a student as well as somebody that is learning. I talk to somebody that I got the experience with for 10 years, and he would not take, like, an answer. He'd say, go find that letter. Go find the letter from Bill Wilson to Carl Jung. And, you know, now you can Google that, and you'll get it. But back then, you couldn't Google it. You'd have to dig, and you'd have to find, and you would have to call people. But if you read the letter, and you read the key point that Bill says, we did not give you the credit we should have given you. We would not do the program today without your recommendation for this one individual that he must have a spiritual experience. And I think that opened up a door to allow for a conversation and a demonstration, because what followed that were people getting sober. See, that's what followed it. So this is what we don't talk about enough. It's like there was an epiphany. You got to have this experience, right? Then you have the experience. Then you see the cases that start to mount up of people getting sober and staying sober.
You're absolutely right, and that's how the miracles ensue. So, Carrie, can you give us some ideas? I know you have lots of ideas as to how one can actually practice their spiritual journey.
Great question.
Yeah. Well, I think some of it is looking at what is someone's interest, because there anything that you are interested in, you can turn into a spiritual practice if that's how you want to orient it. So if you enjoy running, then practice that as your, that can be a spiritual practice. You can connect with nature if you're running out and feel the mindfulness piece of that. You are honoring your body. You can offer, if you're a praying person, you can offer a prayer of gratitude to have this body that can do this. If you like to create art, that can be your spiritual practice if you're a creative person. It's setting the intention about why am I doing these, what am I doing and what's my intention behind it. And then I think there's also that communal piece, and then I can also be a part of groups and sharing that with groups, whether it's going to be a meditation group, whether it is a book club, and we're going to read books that we can talk about our spirituality, or we can talk about how these help us live our lives. It can, practicing spirituality can be, I'm going to have coffee with someone, and I'm going to get past the surface stuff, and I am going to connect with them. It can be joining a spiritual group or a religious group and being a part of that kind of community and developing a prayer practice, a meditation practice. I think anything that you have passion about, you can turn that into part of your spiritual practice and your spiritual journey.
You're right. And I think it's also understanding that you can rediscover your purpose and you can reexamine your values. And that's a very big part of this, correct?
Yes, yes. And then be able to see what, sometimes it's the first time someone has ever thought that they have a possibility of doing something with their life. And so part of that spiritual journey can be opening up to see what is possible and potential for them that is not about anybody else that has told them what they can or can't do in the past. And instead, this is about what I can do and what I want to do and what I feel led to do in my life.
You've noticed, listeners, that in this entire hour, we have not once mentioned religion or God in this conversation, understanding that spirituality and the spiritual journey and recovery may not have to consider those things for you still to experience the miracle of faith and understanding that this program works. What do you think about that, Reverend Fraser?
Yeah, how we started off with, if we look at our spiritual life as being our life force, then however I nurture that life force is my spiritual life. And I don't have to tie it to any formal language of that I mention anything about the divine with that, any form of the divine. I don't have to be connected with a religious organization to be able to know that there are certain ways when I live my life a certain way and I take care of myself in certain ways, my life is better. And I'm a healthier person. I'm a more loving person and I'm able to receive love from other people in healthier ways when I orient my life a certain way.
That's why even agnostics like Dr. Pat can embrace this program, right, Pat?
Well, you notice I did say the God of my understanding 3 times. Just want to point that out. And the reason I'm pointing it out is it took me a really long time. I'm one of those people that had an abusive situation in a Catholic boarding school. And, you know, I'm one of those people. But what I realized is that, and I realized it early on, that my issue wasn't with the man Jesus, the teachings of Jesus. It wasn't with the teachings of any of the masters. It was with the institutional behavior. And once I was able to tease that apart, I had the freedom to choose. See, this is what we're talking about. We're calling this a spiritual program, but you have the freedom to choose what that means to you. Right? Time, I referenced my Harley Davidson as my life source energy. Doesn't matter. It's just not me. If it's you,
you got to think about, whoa, how did that work for you, like, for, like, those years? But this is powerful, isn't it? It's a powerful conversation, and I wish we had more of them about this aspect of clean and sober.
So, Carrie, what do you want our listeners to come away with? Give us a message that's rooted in recovery and spirituality so we can take some positive energy into the universe today.
Yeah.
As
well.
People to have fun with their spiritual life. I think because it is what feeds us. And so to be able to nurture it, to have fun with it, be able to share it with other people, be willing to be fed from other people. And I think that's the game changer. I think that is where the transformation happens, to enjoy it. Not to make it a bunch of hard work all the time, but instead really have fun with it. Let your spirit come to life with what your practices are that you choose to live into.
And as you mentioned, there's so many different ways to do that, right? Not only in the traditional way, but through meditation and journaling and using your creative power and influences and working on affirmations or manifestations or getting on your Harley Davidson and riding across the country, whatever turns you on, right, Dr. Pat?
Yeah, boy, I'm telling you, I'm feeling it right now. Just saying, little sunshine out here in the Pacific Northwest. But let's just go back to this. None of this would exist without sober living. I mean, isn't it great that, you know, the three of us get to show up and do a show like this?
It's absolutely amazing. I'm really,
none of it
really
happens.
Grateful for this.
Yeah.
No question. Carrie, thanks so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it. You've brought so much to the table. And I hope that we have cleared up quite a bit for listeners, understanding that your spiritual journey is what you make it and is certainly a solid part of recovery.
How do we find out about Carrie? How do we find out about each of you? Let's get, you know, what's the best website for folks to go?
Carrie?
So, Natural Recovery Center. That would be the best website to find out what we are doing, from anything from our sober living to our programming to the social events that we host.
Fantastic. And as always, Pushy Broad from the Bronx.com, 1-800-889-1757. Still doing free sessions for COVID-19 stress relief and everything else that you need. Come ask your question. Give me a